Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
So the New England Patriots, and this happens at the Combine, the NFL teams will interview, they'll want to talk with some of these players that they haven't talked with to this point, and apparently the Patriots pulled Oregon State quarterback Jake Luton aside for about 15 minutes for an interview, and one of the questions that the Patriots asked him was point blank, how would you feel about replacing Tom Brady? Great question, right? You're going to find out a lot about somebody by the way they answer that question. Aaron Fentress of The Athletic, he's covered the NFL for a long time, college athletics for a long time. He joins us now. Fentress, the Patriots asked you how you'd feel about replacing Brady. What would you say?
Check, please. I mean, think about that for a sec. You can't. Okay, you're never – well, I shouldn't say that. The odds of you being as great as him are astronomical. So even if you're good and you make some Pro Bowls or even win a Super Bowl, you're still going to be compared to that guy. It's sort of like following Jordan in Chicago. And I still think that's one of the reasons why LeBron did not go to Chicago and went to Miami, because I don't think he wanted to live in that shadow. So that would be tough. Like, if I had a choice of any team in NFL to go to, that would probably be the last place I would go, just because you're going to always be compared to that guy.
Luton this year, by the way, he goes 6'7". He threw for 2,700 yards, 28 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. I find him to be a little bit of a sleeper. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up as a backup somewhere and somebody views him as a quarterback and has a nice long NFL career that way. How do you see Luton? I know you didn't see a ton of him, but what do you think of Luton's game?
I kind of agree with you. I was a little surprised he was invited here, but I think that shows that he definitely demonstrated some NFL traits, clearly. You were not going to invite him to the combine. And, you know, it's almost like a broken record, but I always say that it's going to come down to what you do from the neck up. Like, that's 90% of it. Everyone here can throw it. Everyone here is good enough physically to play. Can he figure it out mentally? And I think the fact that he was in a tough situation in a rebuilding program, not a ton of talent around him when he was playing, they definitely were a lot better, shows that he can maybe has that trait where he can elevate, you know, players around him, make them better. So, yeah, I could definitely see him sticking because he definitely has the physical tools.
Paxton Lynch is 6'7", Brock Osweiler 6'7", Flacco 6'6". Is Luton too tall? I mean, we're seeing an era where mobility is a thing. Is there going to be an era where we go, hey, he's too tall to play quarterback?
Height has always been a little overrated with the quarterback position. Remember Dan McGuire?
Yeah.
6'8", you know, coming out of San Diego State. Oh, he's 6'8". You can see over the line. I'm like, well, Joe Montana was 6'2". He saw the line so fine. You don't have to be that tall. No, you're never too tall. And, yeah, I mean, mobility is important, but it's not more important than being able to make the plays from the pocket, and that's what's going to always carry a quarterback.
Aaron Fentress of The Athletic is with us. You saw a lot of Justin Herbert this year. You've talked to a lot of scouts. I talked to somebody in Indianapolis over the weekend who just was asking me questions about Herbert as a person.
Yeah, I got that a lot too.
What do you tell scouts when they ask you what's Justin Herbert like?
You know, he walked into the combine yesterday for his interviews, and I watched him walk in, and I just his body language, his demeanor, and I thought back to that little kid we saw Cal crumble in tears after he threw that pick in overtime.
Yeah,
and And then all the interviews after that, and you know the stories you've heard, we all heard about how emotional he would get, how he would take things to heart, and how much growing up he had to do. I remember one of the first things Taggart talked about in the spring of 2017 was, he said this long text thread one time was like, dude, this kid has to grow up. Because he knew how much I liked Herbert and jocked Herbert. He's like, man, your boy needs to grow up. And you just think about that kid and who he is now. He's just completely different. And it's one of the cool things about covering college sports is you see these 18-year-olds come in, and they're full of such bravado, right? They're so cocky. And you just look at them and you just shake your head. And you're like, you're just a kid. And it's not, you're not being degrading to them. You just know that they're going to be so much different when they leave in 4 years. And he is so different. He was so cool. He was much better in the interview yesterday than I really believe I've ever seen him. And I talked to Shane Lemieux and Calvin Throckmorton and Jake Hansen about him and about how much they've seen him grow, because they were redshirt freshmen when Herbert got thrust into the starting lineup. They're a year older, and they all talked about how much different he is. So that's why I've been telling scouts is that, yeah, there were some red flags earlier, but he's a different guy now. Like, he is not that guy. He's still more quiet than most. He's not – I don't know if he's necessarily ever going to be a true alpha, but I believe that alpha potential is showing. Like, he's just becoming more of just a man.
I had said to the person in Indianapolis that I felt like I watched him grow even in the last year, where he became more vocal, became more of a leader, but I don't think he's ever going to be a rah-rah guy, and they shot back. Well, Andrew Luck wasn't either.
Right.
So I don't...
Yeah, it's a positive trait. It's nice to have. I mean, you see it around, obviously, but it's not 100% necessary, I don't believe. Bottom line is, can you make plays? I mean, can you make plays is what's going to determine most of what your success is going to be.
Where do you see Herbert, and where do scouts see Herbert in this draft?
Definitely top 10. You know, I've seen some lists that sort of have him maybe the 20th best prospect, but he's a quarterback, which obviously elevates you. And there's teams, usually, you know, the first teams need quarterbacks, so it usually elevates you. But, you know, the couple scouts I've talked to say straight up that, yeah, he's got all the tools. You know, the only question mark is, of course, that leadership component. And that was the same thing with Marcus, too. But as one scout said to me, he said, look, he goes, the only thing that you really worry about there is that they have to have the cojones enough to be able to be the voice of the team at times, to accept blame, deflect blame, not crawl into a shell. You know, I'm a Bears fan, and Mitchell Trubisky took a lot of heat this past year. Like, we turned the TVs off around here so we don't have to hear them. No one wants to hear that kind of crap. Just admit your faults and take the bullets for the team and be that guy. And I think Justin will always be that guy. I asked Justin at the UW game, because the UW game was the first game in which they gave up enough points, 28, to where the offense really had to answer, not counting the Auburn game. And so I was just trying to say, you know, this is the first time when you were sitting there, defense is not going to hold the team to 10 or 15. We got the score today. And he just refused to throw the defense under the bus. Like, oh, the defense plays great. They were great. I'm like, okay, Justin, I'm not trying to talk to defense. You know, I'm just trying to get you to just say that there was that moment. You have to be that moment where you're like, dude, we got to score 30 points today. We can't win this 21-6 like we did at Stanford. And so I finally got to squeeze it out of him. But it's just an example that he's never going to blame anyone for anything. It's always his fault. He will be that guy who will take the bullets for his team and be that voice of an NFL franchise.
Aaron Fentress of The Athletic is with us. You recently posted sort of a rundown of what scouts said about Duck players. People didn't like it. Oregon fans didn't like it. What did the scouts say?
Actually, you know, the comment section was actually like people. I think some people kind of agree with some of it, but yeah, there were some people. Some people think I'm negative for sake of being negative, and I'm like, it wasn't even me. It's a scout. Okay, so Herbert, like I just ran down Herbert. You know, the guy I talked to, his team isn't the main guy I talked to before the combine. His team isn't in the market for a quarterback, but he would have no reservations taking him. Definitely top 10 pick. No question mark there. Juwan Johnson, you know, people, scouts love his size. Love his physicality. Hands a question mark. Speed a question mark. He needs to run well. He's late pick at best. If he runs, you know, sub 4.7, he's in the 4.65 range with his size, I think he definitely has a chance to play and stick. Troy Dye is fascinating. Troy Dye is my Dylan Brooks for this draft. What I mean by that is he's a guy who does everything well but isn't necessarily great, and he's a bit undersized. 6'4", 220 for an outside linebacker. He's long and lean, but he's got the instincts. That's what scouts say. He's got the physicality. One guy even said, he seems pretty full of himself. I'm like, yeah, but it's in a good way. Like, I don't think he ever comes across as he's definitely arrogant and cocky, but not in a negative way. I always found him to be more gregariously arrogant, if that's a phrase. What Scout said, it was that, you know, if he can put on 10 pounds and get to 230-something, maintain some of that athleticism, he definitely could find a niche, especially as a pass defender and a pass rusher in the NFL. The offensive line, now this was interesting because I was down on the offensive line the last 2 years. I was like, either the offensive line isn't pulling its weight as it should, or they're not scheming these guys right, because the running game the last 2 years was statistically the worst it's been since the spread, since they put in the spread in 05. And so I had some reservations about the O-line. I couldn't believe they were ranked the number one O-line in the country. I was like, because I watched too much film, where I would do film reviews, and I was like, how are they, like, Oregon State, how did they not run all over Oregon State? The offensive line had a bad day. So if you've got four NFL guys on there, what's the problem? And this scout just ripped into the offensive line. He said flat out, and I said, you wouldn't take any of them. This is the main guy I talked to for the combine. He said, I wouldn't take anyone to draft pick. I would maybe sign one or two as a free agent, maybe Lemieux. And I was like, you wouldn't draft any of them? He's like, no. He goes, they're just not that good. His questions on Hanson are his strength. He's like, he's not that strong. You have to be really strong in the middle. Lemieux, he says, is by far the best. He thinks he definitely could stick somewhere, but he nitpicked him, like, he has short arms and not that athletic. And the Throckmorton, he's just like, he doesn't have very good bend. He thinks he's just going to get beat around the edge too often by elite pass rushers. Didn't think he did well at the Senior Bowl. So he was really down on the offensive line and thought all three would be late draft picks at best. Is there anyone else on this?
Yeah, Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. I think Troy Dye is going to stick. I think they'll find he's a football player. You know what I mean by that?
Right.
You
100%.
Know?
Yeah. Just like Dylan Brooks. That was my thing with Dylan Brooks coming out. Like, he's a baller. He's going to make plays. He's going to do everything well. He may not be great at anything, but he's doing everything well, and he's smart. Just like Dye is smart, just like Brooks. And, I definitely think he's going to find a player.
I could see San Francisco taking Troy Dye and just saying, we'll put you somewhere on this defense and put you in a position to make plays.
Right.
Hey, Fentress, the Seahawks, real quick, because I know you're tuned in with them. They go get a tight end. What do they need to do in this draft?
Oh, man. I think free agency is going to determine where they go in the draft. They have about $50 million in cap space. You got Jadeveon Clowney as a free agent. He's probably going to be looking at $20 to $25 million a year. Can they afford to go that deep with him when you're already paying Wagner 18, when you're already paying Russell Wilson 35? And then you have to figure out what to do with Jermaine Asetti. He's the right tackle that Seattle fans, you know, seem to hate on, but he's a solid right tackle in a league that has few tackles. Like, Jermaine Asetti is going to get paid this offseason. I don't know. Seattle fans may not want to believe that, but someone's giving him 10 plus. I think they might franchise tag him or transition tag him. And then you got Jerron Reed, who's going to be a $10 million defensive tackle. So right there, if you're assigned all three of those guys, your cap space is gone. You can't do that, obviously. So what they do with those three positions, and then, you know, do they cut KJ Wright to free up some cap space? Do they cut Justin Britt, the center, to free up some cap space? It's all going to determine what they do in the draft. And what they'll do in the draft is they'll go in there and they'll trade down, they'll accumulate more picks and try and get as many kids as they can in there for competition and just hope you can hit on as many as possible to fill the holes that you can't fill in free agency.
They should have three picks inside of like the first 64. They need a defensive back. They need an edge rusher. Because I always look at Russell Wilson and I go, I wonder what he would do with more around him. Or do they look at him and go, Russell's got this. We can put Aaron Fentress in that backfield and he'd be fine.
I think they try and play a little bit of money ball. And it's one of the things Seahawks fans are pissed about. They want them to do what Kansas City's done. Put a bunch of elite fast receivers out there and just let him throw the ball around like Mahomes does. But that's not sort of what Pete Carroll wants to be. He wants to be physical on defense. He wants to run the football. But, you know, I was suggesting the other day with my comrade who I cover the team with, like, maybe just say the next 3 years we're going to go all in, and maybe you trade for Stephon Diggs. If he's available for a second-round pick, you have to eat some of that cap money, obviously. But maybe you go all in. You've got Metcalf, Lockett, Diggs, Olsen, Disley, and you open it up more. You throw the ball 65% of the time instead of running 55% of the time, and you let Wilson see if he can carry you to a Super Bowl title. I mean, I think that's something to consider. Now, I think what's more likely that they do is they draft a receiver in this draft because it's one of the deeper receiving drafts in recent years. And Pete Carroll even let it slip a little bit that almost that, yeah, they're pretty much going to take a receiver in this draft and hope they can hit on somebody who can be that number three and number four guy.
Aaron Fentress, you're the best. I appreciate you talking football with us.
No problem, anytime.
All right, there he is. Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter. Check him out. Good stuff from Fentress. I mentioned Crazy George earlier in the show. I believe Adriana has spoken. Did you talk to Crazy?
I did.
What was that like?
I talked to him and his wife.
Isn't it weird that you work in a job where you had never heard of this person? We bring him up. You look on YouTube. You watch him. And suddenly you're on the phone with him?
I mean, it's just a crazy life that I'm living.
What did he say?
He was very curious about, like, why we wanted him on. And he did, I think he remembered you because when I said your name, he said Oregon. So
yeah.
He knew.
He came on once before.
Yeah, and he wanted to know how long ago. And I said it was probably, like, 5+ years.
Yeah, it was a while ago. I couldn't find the interview. But I also... I grew up watching the guy.
That's what I told him.
And then I think I wrote about him once when I was working at one of the Bay Area newspapers. And he's how old now?
76.
Has he still got it? Like, does he have the good energy? Did he?
He does have good energy. His voice is a little bit, you can tell from like being a cheerleader for that long. I feel like your vocal cords get pretty worked out.
Did he sound like a little bit like this?
A little, yeah.
That's kind of how he was.
Yeah.
I'm thinking we bring him out to Oregon and do an event with him. He can't be the focal point. He's got to be a surprise. Bring him out to Camp Exceptional.
That would be great.
All of a sudden, don't, it's Crazy George.
Uh-huh.
All right, he's coming on today?
Yep, 2.
2 o'clock, mm-hmm. See? That's what we do here. Our big splash is coming up. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, Taylor's Bar and Grill in Eugene has been closed. The reporter who has done, I think, the best work on reporting about what's gone on at Taylor's, popular college bar adjacent to the campus, Chelsea Deffenbacher of the Eugene Register Guard will be joining us. Apparently, she went over to the restaurant. It closed on Tuesday officially. She went over there today, and they had a sign on the door that said, closed, no trespassing, and it was affixed to the door with a Band-Aid. You know, like when you're out of everything else, and you got to rummage through the drawers of your house to be like, here, just hold this on there for a little while. How bad do you have to be to put a Band-Aid on a note and put it to the door of the bar? We got nothing else.
It also looks like it's on the back of a receipt.
Yeah.
Like, in the scribble, the handwriting, closed forever. No trespassing.
No, but nothing says we're out of business like a note scribbled on the back of a receipt affixed to the door with a Band-Aid. That's like, you know? They didn't have, like, a knife they could put through the thing, like, dong, on the door. That, of course, brings us to our big splash. It's the one thing that you need to know in sports today.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there.
The big splash. Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
Well, some news in the NBA. Hornets' Malik Monk has been suspended indefinitely by the NBA. He violated the NBA's anti-drug program. The league announced a suspension today. They're not disclosing the details of it. They left the suspension open-ended. It begins Wednesday and will continue until he's determined to be in full compliance with the anti-drug program. He's 22. He's averaging 10 points in 55 games. His third season with the Hornets. And Malik Monk will be shutting it down. I once had a Trailblazer player told me, tell me, that you had to be an idiot to get caught with the NBA's anti-drug policy. You had to be because the Players Association had negotiated a provision that said you could voluntarily enter their program rather than have a positive test. All you had to do is raise your hand and basically go, I don't think I can pass this test. I'm not going to take it. See, what the Players Association wanted was to avoid positive drug tests. News like this. They were willing to negotiate this as part of their collective bargaining agreement where a player told me, you had to be stupid to have a positive test. This is a Blazers player, longtime Blazers player. He says, you had to be dumb. He says, all you have to do if you're going to not pass is call and say, I want to voluntarily enter the program. You get no negative tests. You just go through like some online stuff and a little bit of counseling, and you get slapped on the wrist, but you don't have what Malik Monk has been suspended for. And by the time it gets to this point, I have to wonder how many tests Malik Monk has failed or what he failed for. Pretty sad. All right, coming up, 1 o'clock hour, Punch It Audio. Chelsea Deffenbacher of the
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.